From 6 feet overhead, this is Here Be Monsters. So Vincent, would you want to happen to your body after you die?
I think for me, it's as long as it's like dug in the ground, it's, I think, like good enough.
What happened to your father's body when he died?
It was a burial, traditional one. He wanted to have a ceremony at the church. He wanted a priest to do the ceremony, even if he was not like a huge believer.
Was it an open casket or a closed casket?
An open one. I didn't understand like the necessity of it. I understand the necessity of the ceremony, but I don't understand like the necessity of looking at the body.
Does the idea of body decomposition disturb you?
Probably a bit. In some sense, you want to keep a bit of sacred feeling about death, and just thinking about like how the body will decompose is not helping, I think. You know, like when you say decomposition, I think like at least I would think about worms going like all over my body and like eating it. And that's not a thought that sounds really good for me. And maybe it's like a question of how do you present that? On the other hand, I think like people like the idea of being incinerated because it's the idea of like, you know, you come back to ashes and there's something pure in ashes. Not something like a bit gory, as like you would have by picturing worms.
Do you remember the day? It was in late November. I came downstairs and I said, oh, tomorrow I'm going to the body composting facility. Do you remember what you thought when I told you that?
Yes. You know, the first thing that you have in mind is that they're doing that like for just like to make money or something like that. I felt that was like horrible, like in comparison to like what is it to like grieve someone and like to make peace with it, and it would like really withdraw this opportunity just treating bodies as like a good ecological thing.
Is it like a form of desecration or like?
Yes. For me, it's like mostly this idea that it's, you cannot completely desecrate the process. It's foul.
So when I told you I was going to this body composting facility, did that put an image in your mind? Did you have an image of what you thought it would be like there?
Yes, like you would imagine like being treated as like objects in a factory. So that's like the idea that I had, I think, from it. And that seems not great because you don't want like your beloved one like to be treated like as a mere can on a chain, I would say.
Yeah. So you're saying like a conveyor belt of like, yes, dead, exactly. Bodies, yeah. Yeah, I think that's a pretty disturbing image. Do you want to see pictures of what it actually looks like? It's not gory, I promise. Okay. Yeah, let me just pull up those pictures, and I'm curious to hear your thoughts on what it actually looks like. Just a second.
Here Be Monsters. The podcast about
what we're leaving behind.
The podcast about the unknown.
The sponsor for this episode is the podcast Sleep With Me. Sleep With Me is a show that is your companion as you fall asleep, and I listen to it on nights when I feel lonely or anxious before bedtime. And the host, Drew Ackerman, will tell these convoluted stories that help take my mind off of things. Like how he tries to keep his dog's feet warm while she sleeps.
I could see Don Draper draping a dog. Not a perfect, you know, not a perfect person, but probably would drape a blanket on a dog.
A list of toys in the 1983 JCPenney catalog.
Equaltron Castle, $49.99.
A metaphor about life that can be found in your washing machine.
Don't look at it as turbulence. Look at it as empowered dancing. The washing machine is empowering you to dance that dirt right out of you.
I'll be honest with you, I actually didn't really get the show when I first started listening. It took me a couple tries over a couple years, and now I'm so glad that it finally sunk in. You know, good podcasts can be a lot of things, and I think it's a misnomer to think that, like, for something to be good, it has to, like, grip you at every single moment, that has to be, like, occupying your full brain. Sleep With Me is a show that makes it clear that something can be both extremely creative and utterly boring at the same time. So I hope you subscribe to Sleep With Me on your favorite podcast app. And thank you, Sleep With Me, for supporting Here Be Monsters.
I'm going to use lulling, soothing, creaky dulcet tones. Oh, so creaky are my dulcet tones.
In November of 2021, I got a message on Instagram from an account called Return Home NOR. It said, "We are wondering if you'd care to chat about human composting. We have the largest facility in the world in Auburn, Washington, and we'd love to talk about everything death with you. Stay wild." I do get these messages from companies sometimes, and I'm always pretty skeptical of anything that feels too much like branded content. But I wrote them back, and in my subsequent messages with Katie, their services manager, it was clear to me that this was different from the normal promotional interview requests that I often find in my inbox. You see, I've been interested in human composting ever since I heard it was working its way through the Washington State Legislature, largely thanks to a local activist named Katrina Spade. And when the governor signed that bill that legalized human composting in 2019, it set into motion this change that some people like me are kind of hopeful about, because I have trouble with the death industry sometimes. Feels like it's often a way of preying on people's deepest fears about death. My conversations with Katie were interesting, and I could tell that she thought about the ethics of this stuff a lot, thought about what tradition meant and what it meant to die. So in the end, curiosity got the better of me, and I borrowed a friend's car. I packed some microphones, my recorder, a really thick KN95 mask, and then I drove about 45 minutes south of Seattle, so I could see what Katie and her colleagues are doing in their facility. December 1st. I'm here in Auburn, just about to pull up to Return Home, the human composting place out here. I'm driving parallel to some railroad tracks.
Turn left onto B Place Northwest.
I think I'm here. It's kind of industrial park sort of thing, like a refrigeration store, heating and cooling supply places. God, I know I'm close. Where am I?
Your destination is on the left.
Here we are. Found it. I'm here. Test, test. Test, test. That's good. I see someone over there looking at me. Hello.
Hi, I'm Katie.
Katie, nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely.
Sorry, I'm kind of loaded down right now.
I'm Micah.
Yeah.
Welcome to our world.
So, can you introduce yourself, tell me your title and what you do here?
Yeah. I'm Katie Houston. I am services manager here at Return Home, licensed funeral director and embalmer. I've been licensed in Washington for 8 years, I think, and previously in England.
What was your transformation process like? Was it before this job happened or was it after that?
So, in my day-to-day life, I am generally a good steward of the earth, I think. And then I was going to work and I was pumping people full of formaldehyde and putting them in very expensive boxes, and it didn't line up for me anymore. And then Micah and Return Home came along, and I thought, this is my opportunity for my personal life to match up with my professional life, and also a chance for me to put my heart into something that will kind of ignite my passion again, because I was burning out in traditional death care.
So for people who die in the United States, right, how many options do you have?
Two. Burial, cremation.
What's wrong with that?
I myself wanted to be cremated up until return home came into my life because I thought it was the best option available. I had been fed the narrative that it was greener, better for the planet, when in fact it's not. For the environment, it's a huge impact. A single cremation uses about 30 gallons of gas, and it puts anything that was useful in your body up the smokestack into the air, and you are left with an inert substance that you can't really do anything with. And then burial, you're putting someone in a sealed metal or wood box inside of concrete liner in the ground, where you will take up land in perpetuity.
Those bodies don't break down?
They do eventually, but they're generally encased in a coffin or a casket and then encased in a vault or a liner, so they kind of break down to a soup that stays in that vault or liner.
Why do we do that? Like, why do we do it?
We don't know any different. I always call tradition peer pressure from dead people. And I think that's what it is. It's your grandma did it and their grandma did it, so you're going to do it. And if you don't know, or if you're not taught any different, when you lose a loved one and you're faced with planning something for them, you fall back on what you've always known.
So where are we right now?
Okay. So we are in the front of house. This is where anyone can come, and as you can see, they do. So we're surrounded by 74 vessels. The vessels ring this front of house room.
So we're looking at a racking system with the vessels of each person on that racking system. It's a warehouse facility, but it is what it is. And our focus was the science and doing this respectfully before we cared about what it looked like. Will the next iteration be prettier? Hopefully. but what we do works, and that was most important to us.
The most important part of this front of house facility is for people to come here and for people to see this. We think it's really important that people understand exactly how this facility operates. Otherwise, the things we don't know, we make a story for, and that story is not always a comfortable one. And I think this helps dispel a lot of the fears that people have and allows them to understand exactly what we do. As long as we have function working well, moving more towards form is a fairly easy transition, and that'll be the next phase we do.
You know, the funeral home has a very specific connotation, and this is not it.
That's right.
Would you be offended if I described this as kind of reminiscent of a Costco warehouse?
Boy, I would hope not, but we can do it. You tell your own truth. But yeah, I take your point.
I love Costco, so yeah, it can be Costco.
Can you kind of walk me through the process of what happens when someone reaches out to you and says, we have a person who's like expressed interest in going through the process of human composting?
Yeah, so we are a fully licensed funeral home, which means we can take you from start to finish. We do partner with local funeral homes, so if you have a funeral home of your choice, you're more than welcome to use them. But we are able to dispatch people to pick the person up and bring them into our care. Once they're in our care, everyone is given a bath. They're dressed in a compostable garment that is pressed cotton. It's like a very fluffy kind of robe, basically. And then they would go into refrigeration until we have permits and authorization signed by the family. We make decisions like how many death certificates they want. Do they want to put an obituary on our website? Do they want to be here for the laying in of their person in the vessel? What kind of things they want to put in their vessel with them? Yeah, they can kind of make it whatever they want to. So if they want to come and help us do the bathing, wash their hair, put the garments on them, then they are more than welcome. And then it would go to the laying in ceremony, where the person is laid on the organics in the vessel, and then the vessel is open for their family to say their goodbyes and place with them what they wish. They can place whatever they want in there that's organic. We usually say if it can go through our gut, it can go in the vessel.
What are some of those things that people bring?
My favorite so far has been a family poured a bottle of champagne in. There's been candies, flowers. Some lady went in with a pumpkin muffin from Starbucks. It was great.
At the end of that ceremony, do you put the lid on and put them on the rack?
Is that... Yes, we put the lid on and we place them in their spot on the rack. We have a gong. We hit the gong, we say the person's name, and we wish them a good journey. And we do that in order to kind of push our staff to take 10 seconds to think about that person, their life, what they gave to us in their lifetime, so that we don't forget that these are people. So once they're placing their vessel on the rack, it's 30 days in this front of house section. And they're really just kind of left to do what their body was made to do, which is break down. The only thing we do is about week 3, we rotate the vessel, and then they're put back on the racking system. And after that, they go to what we call screening, which is when we would upend the vessel, and what is left is compost and the inorganics. So implants, stents, any kind of hardware that's in the body that we'll remove, those are recycled. There's some bone left that we pulverize just like they do after cremation. And then that bone is placed back in the compost and it sits for about another 30 days to cool down and off gas. And then it's ready for the family to pick up.
And that's the whole process?
That's the whole process.
It's a lot of soil, right?
It is. It's roughly 500 pounds. And I thought that people would take less of it than I'm finding they are. More people than I thought are taking the entire amount. And they're sharing it out, which is, it's kind of cool to me.
What do you do with the stuff that people don't claim?
We have an 8-acre greenbelt property about 5 miles from our facility by a public trail and park, so people can visit that area, and we spread the remainder that people don't take up there.
Is human composting good business?
Yeah. It is a business, and we have to operate as one to survive, and at capacity, we will be doing fine.
So there really is a lot of technology that goes into what we do, a lot of sensors, making sure that everything is working optimally. Any vessel that's got a piece of paper on it has a person in it.
So we're on the backside of the containers now, which are these kind of tan gray boxes. How where are the dimensions, did
eight,
you say?
8 by 3.5 by 3.5.
And so on the backside here, what am I looking at? What are these
tubes? You're looking at the temperature sensors, and you're looking at the airflow sensors here. And of course, we have our latches that keep our vessels closed.
Yeah. Tell me what you're looking at on the screen then.
So for this one, number 40, this would be, we have the weights, we have our organics, we have temperature here, which is it's quite remarkable. It's running at 141 degrees. That's pretty much with no energy inputs. So, it's pretty remarkable, and it allows us to monitor everything that goes on in a vessel without ever opening it. And that's really important to us. My name is Micah Truman. I'm the CEO of Return Home. I put together the teams that developed the science, technology, and ultimately built the facility. So that's sort of what I've done obsessively for the last 3 years. Prior to that, I was working in a finance company. We raised capital. So it was quite a significant pivot from what I did previously to what I do now.
When was it that you had first found out about natural organic reduction?
I found out in the very early days. Katrina Spade was the person that really was the original messenger. Katrina Spade runs a company called Recompose. They have a facility also in Kent. She has been a titan. Really pushed this forward over these last years, pushed it through the legislation. There were others, but she was certainly a big one. And it was through that that I heard about this movement.
Is it common practice if you see someone who's doing something that's like good for the world, the market hasn't been saturated by it, and you say, I can do that better. Is that common practice then to be like, go off and make your own company that does it?
Is the question then that I saw Katrina and then decided I'll try to do it better?
Yeah.
Not quite. My belief is that this model really needs to grow, and it needs to go across the country, and it needs to be available to everyone as quickly as we can. And I think it's really easy to see business as rapacious in a way, because of course our obsession with growth is also what destroys us, right? But in this particular case, we have to be able to show the world that we can do it, and then we have to be able to give it to them. Otherwise, we're just a boutique. The fact that we have these companies opening means we're going to have an industry. This is going to have to be done by a group of companies. There is so much to be done. If this industry is good, there's going to be all kinds of competitors. It indicates health in our sector. The skill that I have is to build and scale companies. It's what I know how to do. The bigger that this movement gets, the bigger these companies become, the better the world is for it. And I, honest to God, don't know many other industries or companies where that's the case.
Do you ever feel like imposter syndrome at the Funeral Directors Conference?
Hell yes. So I don't think it means imposter like, oh, I think I'm unqualified. I do think I'm qualified and I think we've done a good job. But it's like I feel like I come from a different universe than the traditional funeral industry. That's true. It's a very different world. So I remember going to the Funeral Directors Conference in like 2018. And, you know, they were all doing their thing. And, you know, like the last night when everyone's having a couple drinks and there's a band and everyone had a couple pops. And I was sitting next to a young funeral director and she looked at me and she went, are you really serious about this? And I was like, yeah, you know, I think this is really something that's important. She goes, I really don't like this. I'm worried about this. And I was like, why? I mean, the law's about to pass. Like, this looks great. And she goes, because nothing is proven. And a bunch of entrepreneurs are going to come in. They're going to try it. It's not necessarily going to work. They're going to go on and make a dog walking app or whatever it is they do after being a serial entrepreneur. And we in the funeral industry have to pick up the pieces. And that really hit me. Okay. So, yep. Now we're going to start going to the middle.
It's a lot quieter back here, huh?
Yeah. So this is, as we said, a two-phase process. In the first phase, the first 30 days, the body is completely transformed into soil. And in the second phase, the soil needs to rest and breathe for a month. It's the same as any other composting system. And so here is where that happens.
Can you give me the visual of this room now?
Katie's better at this than me.
So similar racking system to the front. And we have cubes that are blue in color, plastic, that the compost sits in individually, where we can monitor the temperature of it for the next month.
And you'll notice something cool. You might want to pull off your mask for a second and breathe, but you can smell something. Well, is there a soil smell? Usually there is.
Not really.
Very slight.
Yeah.
Very slight. And it smells earthy, right?
And what's really cool is if you look, we're not plugged into any systems here. The body has been completely transformed into soil. There isn't odor. We don't need to filter it. We don't need to do anything. So it's kind of cool.
I wonder if when people first hear of it, they think there's just a compost heap out back with a bunch of body parts in it and bugs and worms.
People think bugs and smell.
Yeah. I noticed the branding on your website is very tree-focused.
Yes. A lot of what I heard in traditional service was, you know, don't embalm me and bury me, just put me out under a tree or something like that. And the reality is that's not obtainable for most people. Washington State, you have to register that area as a cemetery, and then you cannot sell that land. And you have to, if you sell the property with it, you have to declare that that is a cemetery. And that's an issue for most people when they sell their house if grandpa's buried in the backyard. But you can be turned into soil and then put with a tree somewhere. Or you can be put with a plant. And this, I think, appeals to people who generally are plant people or good stewards of the earth or, you know, have their hands in the dirt a lot during their life. So that's the image we went with.
You know, you threw around the term natural organic reduction.
Yes.
What is that and why is that term sometimes used?
That is the legal definition of what we do. So in all of our state laws, it's referred to as natural organic reduction.
So the legal word is NOR, natural organic reduction. The colloquial term would be human composting.
Right.
And the return home term is terramation.
Correct.
Did I get that all right?
Yep.
Why that term?
Just like we call cremation and not human incineration. We wanted a term that was respectful, but also explained the process when you think of it. Terra is earth. Mation is the creation of, so we create earth.
You've also trademarked it, of course.
Yes, yep.
It's a little different from cremation, right?
True.
What does it cost to get embalmed?
If you were talking like a traditional funeral service and embalming with a burial, you're looking $10,000 and up.
What about being buried without being embalmed?
It takes a little bit off, but the biggest expense is the casket and the plot of land.
What's it cost to get cremated?
Depending on where you go, it's between $2,000 and $5,000.
And then what does it cost to undergo composting here?
$4,950, all inclusive of death certificate and county fees.
So tell me what we're looking at now.
This is piggy compost. So this is compost from one of the pigs that we tested on. So as you can see, it's pretty uniform looking, almost beauty bark texture.
You run a hand through it?
It's okay if I...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So slightly moist.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Really fine texture. This is mostly not a pig, right? What percentage of animal versus plant material am I looking at here?
Roughly a quarter.
Quarter?
Roughly a quarter.
Yeah. And it grows well?
Yes. We have piggy compost on pretty much all of our plants here in the office, and they have kind of exploded with growth. So that's super cool. Yeah.
Pigs and humans aren't that different, are they?
A pig is harder to terramate than a human because like our weight is spread out more than a pig, so... I think they're harder to terramate than humans, which is why we started with them, because if you can do a pig, you can certainly do a person.
Yeah. And for a pig also, you know, like a pig is like a perambulating block of pork, right? We're 6 feet tall and weigh 200 pounds. They're 2 feet tall and weigh 200 pounds. And so there's really a lot of density there, which is a challenge. And then finally, the skin is really a thing. However, pigs don't have stents and artificial hips. And so that's a different part of the process. It's not necessarily biological, but what we do to our bodies as humans that we've had to accommodate. And that's been a real learning curve for us.
Do you ever, this is a very sterile environment. There's nothing that yells the word death about where we are right now. But that being said, you know, we're 30 feet away from a handful of decaying bodies.
True.
And do you ever have that realization, does that ever freak you out? Does that ever worry you or just give you the creeps, you know?
That's an interesting question. If you'd have asked me, I thought about that nonstop before we opened.
Yeah.
And I thought I would be scared and creeped out. And I often find myself working here alone later at night. And I'm not creeped out. I'm not creeped out at all. You know what I feel like? I feel like we're taking care. And I think the reason that does that for me is I see their families come in and I see them look at us and know that we're the folks that are going to make this work for them. I feel it's a caretaking role. It's a very different situation than originally I'd anticipated. It's kind of comforting.
Is it okay to tap it or is that?
Yeah. Michael, where do you buy a gong?
Craigslist.
Could you give me a medium loud hit?
Well, the way I like to hit it is this.
Why is this illegal in most places?
It's not illegal, it's just not legal yet. Because cremation and burial have been sufficient in people's brains up until this point. And we're at a point now where we're truly thinking about what we're leaving behind for the next generation and truly thinking about how our last act should be one to give back. Now that it's legal here, it's coming other places.
You know, so one thing we had talked about earlier is the fact that as of right now, about 80% of your spots are empty. Were you expecting bigger uptake?
No, I was expecting actually less than we have. The funeral industry is so slow to change.
when cremation became a thing, it took 60 years for it to become mainstream. The fact that we've served just over 30 families now in 4 months to me was quite amazing. And we've continued to grow month over month, and that's all I can ask for. No one wants to really accept their own mortality, but we are going to die, all of us. And if we don't have a conversation about it, I think the people that are left behind are left with difficult questions to answer. We have to make a choice at the end of someone's life to do something. All of them have their own ick factor. It's just what ick factor you're comfortable with. We don't know the ick factor of cremation, burial, and embalming as a general public. So it seems more acceptable to us. And I think when people actually see this and they realize there is no smell, there is nothing done to the body that is degrading in any way, and what you get back at the end is life-giving soil that allows you to live on, essentially, I think the ick factor goes away.
A lot of people's first reaction is, that's kind of wild. But almost to a person, you can see them thinking about it from that time forward. It doesn't leave you once you start. And I think it's going to make a lasting impression.
What is it to grieve someone and like to make peace with it? The thing is that for me, it's still like extremely important to think that like one day I can go to the cemetery like where my father is, and I could like, you know, sit down with no one around and just like, you know, there are like a lot of things that he will never know about my life, and it's kind of like appeasing to think that you can still go to this place, kind of talk to him. Having the illusion that you could do that helps a bit, like, yeah. And so this idea of like letting the bodies decompose can be a good idea if you are able like to let them have the space to process this whole idea in accordance with tradition. Maybe it's just a question of time to get used to like this idea, but hopefully like they can still think about it in a potentially sacred way in some sense.
My name is Jeff Entman, and I produce this episode of Here Be Monsters. The voices you heard on this episode were from Vincent Roulet, who is a mathematician, a musician, and also my roommate. You also heard from Micah Truman, who is the CEO of Return Home, and from Katie Houston, who's the services manager there. Return Home is one of several facilities in Washington State that offers natural organic reduction. And in this episode, you also heard a bit of discussion about Recompose, which is run by Katrina Spade. There's also another facility in Southern Washington called Herland Forest, and some more facilities in the other states where NOR is legal, so currently that's just Oregon and Colorado. There's links to these places in the show notes and also on the podcast website, which is hbmpodcast.com. And also on the website, I've put together a little photo album of the Return Home facility. Those pictures are at hbmpodcast.com. And I'll also post the pictures up on social media. That's at HBM Podcast on Twitter and Instagram. Music on this episode came from Cyrocell and The Black Spot. And many thanks to Hannah Susanna, who helped me with some of the research on this episode. Here Be Monsters is a listener-supported independent podcast, and so if you like what you're hearing, consider becoming a patron on Patreon. That's patreon.com/HBM Podcast. Thanks for listening. More episodes soon.
here. Me. Monsters.